This message was recorded live at Lighthouse Christian Center in Puyallup, Washington, and is designed to inspire and encourage you in your Christian journey. To find out more about Lighthouse, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org.
Guys, most young marriage, when they contemplate having kids, if you're married, you're just married, you contemplate kids, there is a little bit of fear there. Because you think, how am I going to do? You know, am I going to mess this thing up? Is it going to work out? I talked to a young man at the last church I was at. Last week. I was at a different church last week. And he was holding his 16-month-old child. And I just asked him, before you had this child, did you have any fears? And he said, oh, you bet. I just wondered, how would I do? Am I going to mess this kid up? And by the way, when the child gets here, your first child gets here, man, it feels pretty good because, hey, the first couple of years, not much. You just hold them, change them, love on them. It's pretty good. Then they get a little bit older and things get a little more complicated. Have you noticed? They get a little more complicated and you find yourself having times where you're going, oh, man, I hope I'm not blowing this thing. I hope I'm not ruining my kid, in some way. Because most parents feel at sometimes insecure about what they're doing. And sometimes the parents are just thinking, man, I don't know what I'm doing. And I think all of us have been there. All of us have been there in that state. So here's what I want you to know. A home needs certain components in order to be a healthy home. And these components are clear both from Scripture, but they're also clear from experience. And all of us would affirm that there are certain ways, certain things that families do that make that family a healthy home. And guys, as Christian parents, grandparents, aunts and uncles, we want to be as intentional as we possibly can about the homes that God gives us. So I know it can sound complicated, so I boil it down to four verbs, okay? These verbs will say a lot about what we do to make our homes as healthy as they can possibly be. And the first verb, which is an action word, of course, it's pretty obvious, it's just simply this, love. Now, if you haven't been a Christian for a while, here's a heads up. Love, scripturally, is not primarily a feeling, it's primarily an action. Now, of course, it contains feeling, and the feelings are good, but love, of course, is primarily an action. That's what God did when he sent Jesus Christ. He loved us, and he gave. That was the demonstration of his love. And, of course, what I'm talking about here is not what I would just call unconditional love. That's quite different than conditional love. When a parent gives conditional love, he's saying, well, listen, child, if you perform well in school, if you obey me, if you are adorably cute or whatever, then you have my affirmation at all times, my love. But if you don't, then that's going to be withheld. Unconditional love is quite different. It's just regardless of age, regardless of competencies, regardless of what they contribute, they know that your love is absolutely rock solid. In fact, guys, I think parental love, I've said this before, I think there's a kind of irrationality about parental love. It's really almost irrational. Think about holding your first child in your arms. Think about that moment. And in fact, Len, I think there is a picture you could show of me holding my first child. In just a moment. Now, guys, think about the tenderness. This is my daughter, Jenny, who's now 31, but think about the tenderness that you felt. You, when you sense that, you begin to get a glimpse of God's love for each one of us. In fact, it's the same kind of irrationality that somehow we see in when John wrote in 1 John. Look what he said about God's love. How great is the love that the Father has lavished on us, that we should be children of God. We should be called children of God. He's just saying, God's love is so powerful, it's so amazing, it's so transforming, it just jolts my life with this massive dose of love and kindness. It's almost irrational, and it melted his heart. Paul mirrored this same kind of idea in Ephesians. Look what he says in Ephesians. May your roots go down deep into the soil of God's marvelous love, and may you have the power to understand as all God's people should, how wide, long, high, deep is his love. Guys, this is the model for parental love. It's right here. A parent's love most closely mirrors the kind of love that God has for us more than anything else. And so what happens is healthy families, that is healthy earthly families, manifest amazing amounts, surprising amounts, irrational amounts of unconditional love. And that just makes them normal. That just makes them healthy. And of course, if you have a 2-year-old or a 13-year-old, you're going to need unconditional love. I just want you to know that right now. Okay? I think you'd agree with me that God made a mother's heart, a father's heart, just to innately have an overwhelming love for their children. However, remember, love is not primarily a feeling. It's an action. And so you've got to take all parents, all grandparents, all aunts and uncles, man, we got to take the feelings that we have, and we've got to put feet to them. It's got to become practical. In other words, we've got to make choice after choice after choice after choice to demonstrate love. And we've got to do it practically. Let me give you 3 concrete ways to demonstrate your love as a parent or as a grandparent. Here it is. First of all, time and attention. Guys, this is like the blanket statement, really, that covers what love often means most to children. Time and attention. It's helping them with their schoolwork. It's taking walks. It's having meals together. It's listening to them when they're happy or sad or bored or silly or whatever it is. It's doing things together. It's quantity time that occasionally leads to quality time. And that's what it takes. It's foregoing golf, and these days, it's not golf. Young men are most interested in video games, okay? It's foregoing whatever you have to forego in order to spend time with family. And when you're giving time and attention, remember Dr. Ross Campbell's book, How to Really Love Your Child, because he says, here's 3 things that are really super if you're giving time and attention to children. One of them is just focused attention, making sure that you are giving just one child at a time attention, because there's something really powerful about spending even 10 minutes alone with the child. The next thing he talks about is physical affection, hugs, kisses, all kinds of things, because those hugs demonstrate love. And the third thing that he talks about is positive eye contact. And parents miss this one a lot. Remember, parents, you get this idea where you use your eye contact to discipline. And you give your eye contact like this, you know. And really, you know, all he's saying is, no, time and attention, give a lot of positive eye contact. That is, looking at your child and smiling with your eyes. What does that say to a child? You are something special. You are something great, and I love you. And it's so powerful. Now, second, okay, time and attention. You're going to demonstrate love. Number 2, you do it through words and actions that demonstrate worth. Guys, this one is so key because kids don't automatically know that they're loved and important. They're taught that they're loved and important by what a parent says and does. And the ideal of a child's worth has got to be worked on from the time they are 1 day old all the way up to the time they leave your home. I have counseled, guys, hundreds of people, and one of the big psychological problems that I see over and over and over again, you know what it is? It's just the person who does not know on some deep level that they are loved and important, and all that they try to do is try to keep performing so that maybe one day, if I perform well enough, maybe I will get the people to affirm me that really love me. And guys, you know, what happens when you want to perform that way? I have to perform to get my worth. Man, it produces a lot of anxiety. It produces a lot of depression. It produces the kind of person who is never secure in their relationships. So what causes somebody to be so performance-oriented? I'm going to tell you one of the things that's caused by it. It's because they got a conditional message from their parents. It's conditional. Well, I asked somebody in that spot, I said, well, what kind of generic message did you get from your parent? You know what they always tell me? Well, I got the message that if you do well, then we'll love you. Some variant of that. If you do well, we're going to love you. And so if you get a good grade in school, great. We're all for you. You don't get a good grade, we're not. If you obey me right now, great. I'm all for you. If you don't obey me, you're out of here. Don't care about you. Guys, that message is crippling to any person because every single person has got to know that in Christ I'm loved and important. My parents are demonstrating that to me. And in fact, guys, it's so important in all kinds of ways that I think parents ought to be thinking about this. How am I demonstrating unconditional love? And, you know, now some of you are going, well, Art, what about the fact when they get that C in chemistry? Okay, listen, they got the C in chemistry maybe because they didn't work hard enough. Okay, but some are going, yeah, right on. Okay, well, yeah, go for it. I agree, you know, yeah, it could be they didn't work hard enough. But as you help them work a little harder, you are continuing to affirm your unconditional love for them. You know, about a decade ago, I wrote a book called Quiet Times with the One You Love. It's a devotional book for couples. And the very last devotional in that book is called Love is Everything Your Child Needs. And the whole point I was making is this. Parents, we make tremendous amount of mistakes. Would you agree? Parents, do we make mistakes? Yeah, we do. That's why parenting is a very guilt-producing activity, okay? We make mistakes, okay? But what I say in that devotional is this. Love makes up for a tremendous amount of mistakes. One time when my son John, who is now 26, he was 12, and I was feeling like, oh, man, am I doing everything I need to do for this kid? I want him to feel loved, et cetera. I want him to, you know. And so one of the things that we used to do, what I used to do, when my kids turned 12 years old, what I did is I joined them for a quiet time with God all school year. So I would get up in the morning, and we would read the Bible together, talk about what does this mean, and then we would pray together. And I did that so that they would figure out what it meant to connect with God, but I also did it so I could connect with them. And so one day when we were having our quiet time, and it was time for John to pray, and 12-year-olds don't pray all that, voluminously, can I just say that? It's pretty cryptic. But here's what he prayed. He said, Lord, thanks for my dad because he's always kind to me and he loves me. And I'm going, inside I'm going, I'm going, yes, that's it. You know, I'm just going, he's getting it. You know, that's the most important thing. Love is everything your child needs. And when a child feels loved, it makes all the difference in the world to him. Okay, so what's happening here is a couple of practical ways to do love. And the third practical way is this, through open and safe communication patterns. Now, I'm not saying every second of the day that you have to be perfect. I'm not saying that you can't make mistakes because you can make up for mistakes. You can get their forgiveness. But there are two things that your kids need in communication, truth and grace. Truth and grace, over and over again. Truth, grace. That's what God says to us we need. I want you to get truth, but you get it in the context of love. You get it in the context of grace. And sometimes my grace even makes up for your mistakes. And the Scripture gives us so many guidelines about how to speak to each other. I've got them there in your outline. So just look in your outline. You can look them up later. Basically, it talks about you got to listen. If you're going to communicate well, in a godly way, you listen to people, you admit when you're wrong, you tell the truth, you be humble, be gentle with people. Guys, this is the way we speak to children. Think about it. Everything that you say to a child either demonstrates unconditional love or it does not. Now, when I say, good communication patterns, I'm not saying that you agree with your child every time. I'm not saying that you don't talk about the issues. I'm just saying that it's always done with grace, with love, with kindness, with gentleness. In America today, guys, high schoolers are in big trouble. Now, that's slightly different in the church. It is different in the church. But in America, high schoolers will tell you a lot of their stress comes from their family. It's their family. And you ask, well, can you talk to your parents about this? Is that, well, I tried, but they're not listening and they get mad when I talk. So, guys, This is so, so important. So the first word, guys, you know, we could go a lot further here, but the first word is love. If you remember that, unconditional love, and it happens practically by many, many choices that I make as a parent and as a grandparent, that works it. Now, the second word is a little different. It's the word limit. Okay, and what I'm talking about here is I'm just talking about setting boundaries. A boundary is a line that you set in the sand. It's saying, hey, kid, you can go this far, but you cannot go this any further than this. The word limit is just another word for the word boundary. Now, boundaries are important in life. Why? Why would you say, well, it's so important to place limits on a child. Why? Because, guys, think about this. Boundaries are one of the key bases for all relationships. Think about it. We have a relationship with God. Does he have boundaries for us? Yeah, you can do this, you can't do this. Even governments have boundaries. You can do this, you can do this. Hey, listen, good marriages have firm boundaries in place. And I'm talking about boundaries of respect. That is, you know, my wife Naomi, if I said certain things to her, she would say, say what? You can't speak to me that way. I mean, she wouldn't allow me to speak to her that way. But, of course, I would never want to speak to her that way because that boundary is for another place. We respect each other. Boundaries are important for all relationships. And so when you teach your child that they must respect boundaries, you're doing one of the best things that you can do for them for success in life. Okay? Now, we're told in Scripture, by the way, that parents are to set limits. They are to set boundaries. You can find it many places. One of the places is Proverbs 13. If you refuse to discipline your children, it proves you don't love them. If you love your children, you will be prompt to discipline them. And guys, I've talked about this. Some of you have been around for a while. You know the definition of discipline is just simply this. Set limits, enforce limits. Set limits, enforce limits. So that's what the Bible means when it says discipline your children. And when the child decides to go beyond the limit, guess what you have to do? You have to introduce consequences, okay? And this is not rocket science, right? So the four-year-old, you say, honey, it's time to pick up your toys. And they say, no. Okay, what are you going to do? Well, again, according to the age of the child, you might help the child or whatever you might do, but the boundary still has got to be firmly in place. And if the child ultimately won't go there, what has to happen? Wow. Some consequence, some pain, I would say, of some kind, okay? Now, you tell your 16-year-old, you got to be home at 10 o'clock. It's a school night. They're home at 10:45. What do you do if they're home at 10:45? Well, first of all, you listen to them. Honey, why are you late? And if they tell you, oh, man, I had a flat tire, and then I, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, then you go, oh, really? Good, show me the flat, okay? Let me... but then you say, okay, fine, I understand. But if they say something else that isn't, you know, a good reason, then guess what? They went past the boundary. So teach them that going past boundaries is not good. It can't happen. And if it does, it hurts relationships in all kinds of ways. Now, if those limits are not firmly in place in a family, guess what? Your child is not secure. And if they're not secure, that's going to affect them. Now, all I'm saying is being a permissive parent hurts a child. Now, I don't want you to be authoritarian, but I do want you to be authoritative, meaning that you set limits, you keep them. And a child loses a lot of security if that's not in place. Now, by the way, I'm not telling you today, there's no time to talk about methods of discipline. My friends Tim and Katie Ashcraft have a parenting class every year. It's a great class, one that's really positive. It's going to happen after the first of the year, this year. And so just call the office, talk about how could I be a part of that. If you have children and you're saying, I want to know how to not only set limits but do a lot of other things that are positive. But what I'm saying is, guys, it still has to be done. Now, sometimes parents say, well, man, I'm a little afraid of going too far, so therefore I'm going to pull back. No. It is true. That it is true that some parents go too far. And in fact, some parents, my definition of being authoritarian is just where it's just a selfish ordering of the home for your benefit. No. Authoritative parents don't do that. They set limits, they enforce limits for the child's good, not for just their own. And so it's true that some parents go too far and they rage. They do all kinds of things that disconnect them from the child. And I want you to know something. It can go even as far as something that we would even call abuse. And I want you to know that a healthy family realizes, listen, abuse is never going to happen in this family. Experts tell us that nothing compares to the soul damage done to a child whose parents abuse him or her. Nothing. It shatters something fundamental. When a child comes to you looking for protection and doesn't get it, looking to you for affection and gets a slap instead, there's something fundamental that's damaged in that child. So, guys, I know that, you know, we don't want to talk about stuff like that, but I'm just saying, if you have any anger issue when you discipline, listen, you talk about it with your spouse, you talk about it with others, you get it right. Because what's anger today, taking you a little bit beyond what you should be, could move right into abuse if you don't work with it, okay? And of course, by the way, just read Ephesians 4 if you want to know. If you read Ephesians 4, verse 29 and verses following, and you follow it, you would never abuse anyone. Because the first verse says, let no unwholesome word come out of your mouth. That's pretty clear, isn't it? Okay? So healthy families, they have this understanding, man, we don't abuse, we don't intimidate, we don't shame, we speak clearly, we set limits, we enforce them, we love each other in the midst of it, and then it's okay. Now, word number one, love. Word number two, limit. But there is a third word. It's called enjoy. And now we're into my realm. In fact, I told Naomi, you do the other three words, and I'll do the enjoy word. Okay? But no, we have to both do all of them. Okay, just want you to know that. What I mean by enjoy is simply that healthy families play together, and they enjoy a rich variety of activities as the family. They enjoy life together. Why is that necessary, you say? Come on, life isn't about play. It isn't about all this stuff. Listen, here's the reason you do it. Number one, you want to do it because you love them. But number two, you do it because part of your job as a parent is to make a connection with that child. Remember, the best thing about life, love for God and love for other people, connections with other people. And part of connections are made with shared experiences, times when you enjoy what's going on. So it's very, very important. Now, if you look at the scriptures, no, there is no scripture that says, have fun with your family. Okay, I understand that. But there are many principles that would apply that to that, like making your family a priority, like affirming the value of each person, like doing what it takes to love each other, okay, guys? So those principles, I think, totally fit in with this idea of enjoying relationships together. Guys, you know, when I ask people, okay, can you remember a really nice childhood memory? You know what, people, I've heard many, many times, well, I remember that time we went camping. Okay, and then that one time we went camping, you know, the wind came and it blew the tent away. We all got soaked, and they're smiling at this. Okay, what is that? They're smiling, going, "Wow, it was so great." And what are they remembering? They're remembering these times when they enjoyed life together. Now, some of you are going, "I can't stand camping," and guys, I'm never going to sleep on the ground ever again. Okay. I want you to know that, okay, ever again. But forget camping. It doesn't have to be camping. All I'm saying, it's not camping that's important. It's whatever connects you to your children and to each other. Man, I have a friend whose family grew up water skiing, and they have so many great memories around those times of coming together. In my family, one of the big activities was the evening meal. It was understood in our family, no. At the Hunt household, we connect at dinner time. We don't just eat and get up. We linger. We talk. We say, how did it go? We talk about it. And so that time is so important. But guys, it can be so many different things. I talked to one of our guys. His name is Nick Letier. He's the father of one of our families here at Lighthouse. He just was coming back last week from a time at the ocean. He said, wow, this was so great to be with my family. Why? He was making a connection. When my children were home, man, it was a whole host of things, from playing cribbage to meals to vacationing together. And as a matter of fact, I have some pictures here from our family life that you'll show us. See, you know, there's Naomi with 80s hair. Now, you had 80s hair too when there was Nate. I didn't want you to know that, okay? But we went hiking. We did all kinds of things to connect. There's something memorable that happens when families play together. There's a positive kind of exclusivity in which the kids and the families, and it's just us. We're what's important right now. And of course, it doesn't even have to be, that's Lincoln City, by the way, that's where we went every year. Here's my son, John, playing the guitar with me. And by the way, this brings up, it doesn't have to be extended moments, right? It can be 10 minutes, 15, this happened, I think this was about a 15-minute little deal we did. We're just playing our little guitars together, okay? Why? Because that moment was a shared activity. Now, my daughter, who's my baby, she's 24, she and I played so many games together. And one of the games I taught her when she was really young was cribbage. And we played many games of cribbage together. And when she got married to my son-in-law, Josh Dill, I insisted I just kind of made it my duty to teach Josh some cribbage. And I just thought, you have to learn this. You're coming into this family, and she'll learn things on your side of the family, but you got to learn cribbage. And now it's great to see Josh clean Sarah's clock occasionally. That's good. Okay. But when Sarah was 10 years old, what were we doing? I one time had a 200-game tournament of Sorry with Sarah. The game Sorry. And what I did is, every day when I came home from work, I would sit down with her and play Sorry. Every day from work. And by the way, we found out a couple of things. Sorry is a game of chance. Because she won 101 to my 99 games. But I don't even give a hoot about Sorry. I just wanted to spend 15 minutes of focused attention on Sarah, and it made all the difference. Now, some of you are saying, well, Art, you're not mentioning work projects. Come on. Family's got to work together, right? Well, guys, think about it. Yes, you're right. Families do work together. One of the things that my family did every day, we insisted at the evening meal that after the evening meal, everybody got up and worked together until everything was done. The counters wiped, the dishes clean, the floor swept. Everybody worked, so then we could all be free to have free time after that. So work is important, but I'll tell you what's so important about play. And I think even a little more important than work. Because when a parent or when others are, when you're playing together as a family, your only purpose is to be with that other person. That's your only purpose. And so your kids know that. My dad, my parent doesn't have to be here right now. You know, they're choosing to be with me. And that's the great thing about playing. Sometimes you have a lot of fun with the actual thing you're doing, but even more important is that time with the kid. Now, this can include fun traditions that you make. It can include fun shared activities that happen continually at Thanksgiving and Christmas, all those things. But just remember this, enjoy. Why? You're connecting, and when you connect, you are doing all those other things too. You're loving, you're doing such a great job at helping in relationship and making that child feel secure. Now, bottom lines, enjoy. Now, by the way, some of you are going, but Art, when we do those things, sometimes we have one of our children and they just cross their arms and start pouting and it's just a mess. Anybody had that kind of experience? Yeah. Right there. Here's one who was the powder. Okay, very good. We're all there. One time I remember we were just looking for something to do, and Naomi and I decided to go bowling with the family. Our youngest was about 6. So it was terrible. We came out smelling like smoke. My son John was crying because his younger sister beat him. It was like 53 to 50. one or something. And I mean, it was just a terrible experience. But guess what? You have enough quality, you have enough quantity experiences, you get quality experiences out of those. And it's just life to have that go on, right? It's just life. You're in the car and kids are going, you know, that's just life, okay? So you don't say, hey, I'm not a part of that because it's sometimes unpleasant. Much of childish behavior is unpleasant. You do something about that. But bottom line, you keep going. You make those relationships. So I think you should be asking yourself the question, are we playing together, okay? And the final word, we got three verbs. Love, limit, enjoy. Final word, pray. And when I put the word pray down, I'm just saying, let that stand for making Christ the center of your home. That would certainly include prayer. But I'm just really saying, make Christ the center of your home. Jesus gave this beautiful commandment in Matthew 22, saying to do just that. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. It's the first, it's the greatest commandment. Living that out in the home is so important. And we don't know what to do. Ephesians 4 gives us a little bit of help. Look what it says. Fathers, don't exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Now, guys, training and instruction can sound a little general. Let me just say it in a different way. Here's what it means. Parents, bring up your children in a distinctly Christian way. In other words, shepherd the soul of your children. Now, the reason that involves, by the way, teaching, encouraging, modeling, all kinds of things. But the reason I bring it up today is because some parents in our culture, some Christian parents, are saying, you know what? We live in a diverse society. I'll let the kids kind of just, you know, do a lot of different things and kind of decide on their own, kind of just what they want to do. Wrong. Look what it says. Train and instruct in the Lord. Man, that's bring up your children in a distinctly Christian way. Don't abdicate that. Don't say, well, I'll just let them figure it out. Well, of course, ultimately, they have to figure it out for themselves anyway. You can't make them make a decision. But man, make sure that's at the center. Now, grandparents, same thing. Even when I had nieces and nephews small, man, I thought, I'm an uncle. I'm going to help with that. Because I'm going to help guide them to God, okay? Now, having said that, very clearly, let me just remind you, it says bring up. It doesn't say shove down. It doesn't say force feed, okay? In other words, you got to use wisdom, right? You've got to use wisdom in how you do this. So the way I say is this, make it age appropriate and make it rate appropriate. Does that make sense? Rate appropriate? Because sometimes we just want to go, we just keep talking and the child is not listening, correct? We just keep talking and it's not appropriate at that moment. So it's age appropriate, it's rate appropriate. How much do I say? When do I say it? Now there are two ways of looking at Deuteronomy 6. Deuteronomy 6 is, it says, love the Lord your God, and it says, let these commandments be upon your hearts. And then verse 7, it says this, impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit down at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down and get up. Two ways of looking at that verse. One is, you cannot not talk about God all the time. You're doing it on the road. You're doing it when you're sitting down. You're doing it when you're at work. But there's another way of looking at this verse, and that is just simply this. Catch the teachable moments and use them. In other words, you're going to have, your job certainly is to spiritually teach your children, and there's going to be many teachable moments in life as you do life with your child. And it may be along the road, it may be when you're sitting down, it may be any time, but there it is. And use that time, and the Holy Spirit will help you. By the way, it may be a time when your child is having trouble getting along with another family member. Ah, that's a teachable moment. That's when you can use, you can teach them about the love of God and what that means, respect. A time when a child is angry and maybe they can't identify what they're feeling and they're not handling it very well. Parents, One of your jobs is to help your children identify what they're feeling and know how to deal with it. And when you do that, then a child learns how to deal with anger, for example. Oh, this is what I'm feeling. Oh, this is how I might express it. Oh, this is how I might not express it. Okay? So all these things are so, so important. They're teachable moments, and you're going to get a lot of those in life. Now, that doesn't mean, of course, that you say, oh, no, formal teaching isn't important. Guys, when my kids were small and as they grew, we had all kinds of things that we did formally. First thing we did when the kids were really small, we'd just sing a little song about Jesus and would have a little prayer of thanksgiving, and then we'd pray for a few people, and then that was it. But as they got older, we got different things going on. And as a matter of fact, I think when I did my quiet times with each one of my children when they were 12, that was a key part of formal teaching. Because all year long we were there together. So there are a lot of things that you can do, but I'm just saying both informal and formal, man, that is the way to go. You're teaching all kinds of things. I've even listed one formal value that you should teach all kids. It's called respect. And you see it in 1 Peter 2. Show proper respect for everyone. And it just means demonstrating value and demonstrating honor to all other people. And guess what? Can you envision in your life how that could be taught formally, but then also how it could be taught informally along the way? Can you envision that? Oh, you're not treating your brother with respect. Let's talk about that again. How would you treat him with respect, even though you feel angry toward him right now? You see how it works? Those values are taught just that way. Now, it's also, you know, kids watch your lives. There are all kinds of other things that you do that with modeling. Just remember, man, here's what I want to say. Parents, don't abdicate this role. Don't think, well, they'll get it. Oh, they'll get it at church. Well, hopefully church will reinforce what you're doing. But man, don't rely on church. Rely on the family. That's where they will come to know Christ in a real way. As they watch your life, as you talk to them about what it means to follow Christ. Bottom line, if you want to have your kids filled up with God, you got to be diligent about it. And guys, in America today, here's what I want you to know. Families don't need just a mild dose of God. In America today, we need the whole treatment. We need God fully in our hearts and in our lives. So parents, work at making Christ the center of your home. Well, that's it, guys. Four verbs. Love, limit, enjoy, and pray. These verbs are going to help you. And some of you are going, well, man, I'm not sure I'm up to it. I seem to be the only parent who's not doing the best job he possibly could. Well, guys, we all feel like that sometimes. I can remember when my son John was 10 years old. And when a boy is 10, it's different from girls. I don't know why. When a boy is 10, he enters into quite an irritating pattern sometimes. My boy at 10 had lots of irritating behaviors, many irritating behaviors. And one of the biggest irritating behaviors is that he loved to burp loudly. And one of the things, and he would just you could see him just prepare. I mean, it was just, the thing he really liked to do was do that in front of company, okay? And so, of course, we would tell him, now, John, the way that you burp is you put your hand over your mouth and you kind of, you know, kind of keep it in, and then you say, excuse me. But he wasn't getting it, okay? And so during that whole time, we visited this other family at some lake outing, and we were having supper. And this little boy, they had a little boy too. He was 10. His name was Nathan. And all of a sudden, at a quiet point in the conversation, I noticed that Nathan was about ready to do exactly what John did. I thought that he was, but I said, is he going to, it looks like he's, and then all of a sudden his father said, don't you even think about it. Okay. And I realized somebody else is having the same problem. This is great, you know. And I just want you to know, parents, come on. We're all in this boat together. All of us experience all these things through life. We all are working on these things. All I want to say to you is, man, come on, you're not the only one. And you and I can always be thinking about loving, limiting, enjoying, praying. We can think about what those concepts mean. We can be working in those directions. And so, guys, here it is. Love, limit, enjoy, pray.
We trust you are inspired and challenged by this message. For additional resources and information about Lighthouse Christian Center and its ministries, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org or contact us at 253-848-2028.